Among the broad policy questions raised for the next Congress by events at the end of 2012 is, of course, the anticipated responses to the gun violence from the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut. Gun control regulations are already being drafted. But a deeper conversation about how we design mental health policy in America is also underway. It's unclear if that would make it into legislation, but already healthcare professionals are beginning to rethink the way mental health care is offered, allocated, and implemented in America. Joining us now is Dr. E. Fuller Torrey. He's the executive director of the Stanley Medical Research Institute and founder of the Treatment Advocacy Center. He's also the author of The Insanity Offense, How America's Failure to Treat the Seriously Mentally Ill Endangers Its Citizens. Dr. Torrey, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you, John, for having me.
You know, in the Voices post Newtown, and you hear this also when there's discussion of, you know, the proliferation of suicides in the military, that the extreme acts are not a specific result of mental illness, but are much more often a result of a lack of treatment of something that underlies the stresses that might have produced the violence, that we're really, really seeing an unmet mental health need much more than a specific acting out of a mental illness. Is that your view?
That's exactly right, John. We have in the United States about 7.7 million people with severe mental illnesses. And on any given day, half of them are not being treated. And we have effective treatment. So both in terms of the military and about the tragedies, including those that we're seeing in Aurora and Tucson and now more recently in Connecticut, these are treatable conditions that if we were treating these people, we would not be having the number of episodes that we're having.
Is part of the problem here in the deinstitutionalized framework that we exist in now, it's much more difficult to have outreach and to basically create that sort of priority of who's a danger to their fellow citizens. And there's a limited range of options. In the old institutional days, you could take people out of circulation for a period of time. And again, that system had all kinds of problems, but it was a simpler system than what we have today.
We're not talking about a large number of people, John. 1% of the seriously mentally ill, or about 77,000 people, are responsible for a very large number of the problems that we're looking at. So if we just focused on the most severely ill, those who we know have some evidence of dangerousness, those who have evidence of not taking the medications they need to stay stable, we would be doing much better. But both at the state and the federal level, we've had basically no leadership to promote that kind of thinking.
Doesn't the medical community also want to solve this with a pill when, in fact, if we got rid of some of the stigma and mythology associated with institutionalization, that we could have institutional safe settings for this 1% of people that didn't come with the kind of nut house stigmatization that's associated with American culture?
Well, yes, the stigmatization is a major problem, but the stigmatization largely is coming from having these untreated people who then commit horrific crimes, and that causes a lot of the stigmatization. So until we focus on that and actually start treating these people, it's going to be impossible to decrease the stigmatization.
So what is the funding that would best address some of the unmet needs as you see them? Is it more doctors, more screening, more mental health professionals in the workplace, in schools? What are we looking at here?
Well, everybody in Washington, of course, says you always need more money for everything. But in fact, there's a lot of money in the system. There's over $100 billion of federal money in the system right now to treat people with mental illnesses. The problem is it's being spent very poorly because of the lack of leadership at the state level and also the federal level. We probably have enough money in the system now to do a good job if we focused on the people who need it mostly. Yes, we do need more psychiatrists to focus on the people who are severely mentally ill, not on the people who are least mentally ill. And that's been one of the major problems.
Isn't there a First Amendment issue here where you get freedom sort of tangled up with danger to society issues, and that lawyers can basically trump the judgments of doctors on questions that aren't obviously involving danger to people in neighborhoods?
That's absolutely right. We protect the rights of the severely mentally ill so well that it's almost impossible to treat them. The state laws vary by state, but a state like Connecticut, for example, has very strict laws so that even if someone like Mrs. Lanza was trying to commit her son, it would have been very difficult. we protect the rights of the seriously mentally ill, but we are not protecting the rights of the average citizen to be able to go to a movie theater and not be shot or be able to take a subway and not be pushed. It merely involves the State Department of Mental Health and the state legislature to amend their commitment laws, and these are state laws on it, in order to be able to use things like assisted outpatient treatment more widely, which will keep that 1% on medication so that they don't become dangerous.
Dr. E. Fuller Torrey, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
E. Fuller Torrey is the executive director of the Stanley Medical Research Institute, founder of the Treatment Advocacy Center in Washington, D.C. As the NFL is grappling with this, we're going to be talking about MVPs, most valuable players. We want to know who's the most valuable player in your life. Is trying to pick someone out in a team sport actually a destabilizing thing to do? A listener from Oklahoma City writes, "My wife is my MVP, mother of my children, the one person that keeps me on track." A listener from New Jersey says, though, "As with anything that's truly worth it, it's a team effort." On the MVP question, where do you stand? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to weigh in on this conversation or anything else you hear.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.